Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josephowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher, turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game, call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgment and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm really excited to bring you this week's podcast episode with my friend Caitlin Brazil. This episode idea actually stemmed from a really, really good conversation that we were having via voice message in the Instagram DMs a couple of weeks ago. And before we get into it, I want to leave a content warning that we do discuss a lot of nuance around elimination diets and food and anti-diet versus diet culture, and there's some talk of trauma. And it's a really deep and vulnerable conversation, and one that I think is really important, and one that I think we don't necessarily talk a lot about. The conversation was inspired, to share a little backstory, by a group of us. We have a group chat talking about somebody who was posting about the carnivore diet. And while the rest of us were just like going off on what bullshit it was, Caitlin made some really good points about dealing with chronic illness and why some people might choose to do things that seem like they're really drastic or rooted in diet culture. Through my conversation with her, we really came to this conclusion that, number one, it's really fucking hard to listen to your body, and that sometimes when you're in a place of desperation, or you're seeking answers, or you don't know what else to do, it's really easy to get sucked down internet rabbit holes that are maybe not the best suited for you and your needs. And also, that just because one person might be able to find some healing in a specific way of eating, for example, doesn't mean that, number one, that advice is necessarily true for everybody. But number two, that it's not necessarily rooted in diet culture. One of the things we really explore is something that I'm always all about, which is that it's less about what you're doing and more about your why behind doing that thing. So I hope that you're ready to get into a really good and deep and needed conversation. Please listen with openness. Caitlin and I are sharing a lot about our personal stories and our health struggles, and please know that our personal lived experiences are not necessarily the same as yours. And that's kind of the point. So the hope here is that you'll listen to this episode feeling maybe a little less alone and or a little bit more compassion for yourself and others. So let's jump into the episode. Welcome to the podcast, Caitlin.
Hi.
I'm really excited to get into this conversation. And for the audience that's listening, a little bit of a backstory about this. Caitlin and I were actually having a conversation in the DMs on Instagram, and we were voice messaging backwards, or not backwards. We were voice messaging back and forth for what must have been like an hour. And I was like, this is so good. The people need to know. And I honestly, that's half the reason I have a podcast. And I say that so often is because I'm talking to people that I know about something about their lived experience that I think is really helpful or interesting or whatever. And I'm just like, the people need to know. So let's get into the conversation. Why don't we start out, Caitlin, by you telling us a little bit about you, who you are, what you're up to these days, and then we'll get into a little bit about how this conversation came to be.
Yeah. So my name is Caitlin. I am currently a stay-at-home mom and also a homeschool mom. And that was very unplanned, but a couple years ago, I was actually a certified personal trainer as well as a body image coach. And I existed in the anti-diet space and I was loving it. I was very happy. I was growing my business. And then in 2020, which is just like the year of chaos for everybody, just a total dumpster fire, my life kind of came crashing down overnight. So I ended up with an autoimmune condition. And the first flare up that I ever had knocked me on my ass for 2.5 weeks straight, could barely get off the couch. And I mean, I couldn't even lift the coffee pot. My whole body was swollen. I have never experienced pain like that. I was having panic attacks because I was terrified about what was happening to my body. And I still, to this day, am dealing with an autoimmune condition that is currently undiagnosed. So it's been a fun, interesting journey over the past 2.5 years, but it really shifted everything for me. And we can get into why, but I stepped back from my business. I stepped back from lifting weights. I was training for a powerlifting competition before I got sick. I ended up homeschooling my kids and my world looks completely different than it did 2.5 years ago, very unexpectedly.
And one of the things, Caitlin, that I appreciate about you, and we were talking about this before we actually hit record, is that you have this beautiful way of bringing me back to reality when I'm going off on like one of my rants or like pissed off about like this thing or that group of people or whatever. You just have this beautiful way of coming back and being like, hey, what about this? And I'm like, oh, what about this? Because that's, so we actually met through an online business coaching group and through that kind of branched off and became friends, internet friends, even though we've never met in real life. There was a lot of, you know, conversations that happened behind the scenes and in the DMs. And at one point we had like, during lockdown, we had like a Zoom cocktail party.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like we got together on the Zoom and had some fun, except it was, just reminiscing.
I really appreciate you saying that. I think that's the Enneagram 9 in me. I'm definitely a peacekeeper. And I will also say sometimes leaning towards people pleaser, which is not necessarily healthy, but I do pride myself in being able to really empathize and see all sides of the story. And I think that's a gift that I bring to the table, but also I struggle with ruffling feathers. So sometimes I definitely do better with like a one-on-one conversation when I can have a dialogue with somebody just one-on-one versus putting it out on the internet for everybody to hear. That doesn't necessarily feel aligned with me, but having these one-on-one dialogues, I feel like that is something I do have a gift in, being able to kind of share a different perspective and empathize with the other side, you know?
Yeah. And can you, because one of the things we talked about most recently was, I guess, like the assumptions that we make about people, or assuming that because somebody does a certain thing, that all these other things must be true about them. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share, you had a story that you were talking about somebody that made some assumptions about you as a homeschool mom that turned out to be totally false.
Yes. So, I think now we live in this internet culture where things are very, very black and white, and very polarized. And I think in reality, most of us actually live in the gray area, but we don't want to talk about it. And I think there's these assumptions that we make about the lives that people live. And so from, an outsider's perspective, I am a homeschool mom. I shop at my local farmer's market. I do some holistic things to help my autoimmune condition to manage my quality of life. And I'm also a homemaker, and I take great pride in being a homemaker. I like to cook from scratch. I enjoy doing those things. And I love to garden. My garden is just my place of peace.
Magical.
I love it. It's just, I mean, it just grounds me and brings me back to earth anytime I'm struggling. And it's interesting what people have made assumptions about, you know. I have some friends in the feminist space that have felt like they needed to voice their concerns about my role as a very, you know, I kind of look like the 50s homemaker, stay-at-home mom. And that's something that I have chosen to do, but, you know, it looks like oppression to some people. Mm-hmm. And there's also a pretty conservative homeschooling community in this area. And I will say I don't lean towards, I wouldn't put myself in any political camp at all. I think we all kind of live in the gray area for many things. And I think there's this assumption that because I homeschool, I don't want my children to be indoctrinated by the public school system, or I hate the public school system, or I hate public school teachers. And none of those things are true, or that I shop at the farmer's market because anything at Walmart is beneath me. Or there's just these assumptions that are made about the things I do because certain camps of people also do those things. When in reality, you know, some of those things are incredibly not true, you know? So, I do love to be a homemaker. I enjoy this life, and this is a life that I've chosen, and it feels very aligned for me. And I love to garden, and I love to shop at my farmer's market because one of my values is knowing my farmers and shopping and supporting local businesses. And I have access to that. Just quick side note, I live in like the agricultural mecca of the United States. It's abundant here. And so it's everywhere. Yeah. And so, you know, not everybody has access to that. And the real reason I pulled my children out of public school is because, you know, there were a lot of questions about my health at the time. And it was, my oldest was going to be starting kindergarten when they were doing distance learning. And at the time I had some suspicions, which have now been confirmed, that my oldest is on the autism spectrum. And I knew he's received an official diagnosis since, but I knew he would not thrive in that setting. Yeah. And so I knew I needed to opt to do something different. And it ended up being one of the best things that I never expected. I mean, I love homeschooling, but I'm also very pro public school, and I'm very pro public school funding. And I think our teachers are not paid enough. And it's interesting to kind of walk this line of being in the middle of both camps on some kind of extreme issues. And recently I had hung out with a friend, and I was surprised to find out that she thought that I was very anti-vax. She thought I was anti-public school, and I had to correct her on some of these things. And it was uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable for me. And I couldn't help but think, like, man, what other assumptions are people making about me? And do I need to post disclaimers about my life on Instagram in order to satisfy certain people or weed out certain people? But I don't want to have to do that. You know, right. I don't want to have to do that.
And it's, gosh, like, this whole thing is so interesting to me. And again, like, being somebody who knows you in a lot of different ways, when you were telling me about this coffee date that you had with this old friend who made those assumptions about you, and then you were talking about being concerned that some of your friends were, you know, who were like in the more feminist space, going to have these certain opinions about you. And at the end of the day, and this is where I think the tie-in comes in with what I do, it's not about what you're doing. It's about why you're doing it. And for me, my big thing, and I love the analogies so much, it's not about the fact that you're homeschooling your kids. It's about your why behind it. And the same thing is true for, you know, fitness, I think a lot of people, and this is the gray area that I navigate in the diet culture, anti-diet culture, I guess you would say, space. Yeah. God, fitness without diet culture, that you can't do like hard things or enjoy hard workouts, or you're like punishing your body, and that's diet culture. And I'm like, No, it's like, it's all related to like your why behind it,
right,
and doing things because you enjoy them and because they fulfill you. And I guess, I don't know, just kind of bring you home to yourself. And The same can be true. It doesn't make a difference if you're, you know, homeschooling your kids or working or not working or doing gentle yoga or powerlifting or whatever. Right. Like, it doesn't make a difference. It's all about the why behind it. And I really hate that we have to explain ourselves about that. The thing that I really wanted to talk to you about the most today is this whole conversation and how it started. We got into a talk because one of our other mutual friends had shared a post from somebody who was promoting an all meat diet?
Yes, it was the carnivore diet, which is it's an animal based diet. So it's not just meat, but it's like meat, eggs, butter, things like that. So yeah.
And so this person was promoting this online. And then there were some like other, you know, comments shared or something. And somebody was asking like, oh, well, like, how do I get my, you know, my kid to do this and blah, blah, blah. And we were just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, this is really fucked. Like, what are they doing with these kids? All of that. And as much as I hate these kind of things, like these dogmatic diet approaches that maybe are kind of like based in some sort of quackery in a lot of cases. I have my own personal experience with that, having gone like all in with paleo and specifically like Whole30 being my last hurrah. I feel like a previous version of myself could have gone down that carnivore rabbit hole had it been marketed to me in the right way. And one of the things that you pointed out that I don't think a lot of people talk about is when you're in this place, like with your health, where here you are, you're in an extreme amount of pain and discomfort and uncertainty, and you're not getting the answers that you need from conventional medicine, and you're feeling so stuck. Stuff like a carnivore diet might start to feel really tempting. And you pointed out that you can see why people go down these rabbit holes and get like sucked into stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, shit, you're right. And how easy was it for me to forget when I was very much there? Different flavor of the same shit sandwich, but like six years ago, me dealing with a bunch of like thyroid issues and hormone dysregulation, I thought that eliminating all kinds of foods were going to save me. And turns out it didn't. But do you want to talk a little bit more about, I guess, your experience with any and all of this, like that fear of judgment when you're trying to explore alternative health solutions? And then other people might see that as diet culture, and you feel like you're going to be rejected by this community that has been so like accepting and healing for you.
Right. So, I mean, to give a little bit of backstory first, I mean, I've been on a diet since age 10. So I was trapped in diet culture for 20 years. I had been on, I had yo-yo dieted since I was 10, and, you know, I hit like a rock bottom, so to speak. Definitely had some disordered behaviors. And I just reached this point where I realized I couldn't do this anymore. And so for me, I very quickly latched on to the intuitive eating movement and the anti-diet space, because I needed something completely opposite of what I had been doing for the last 20 years. And initially, yes, it felt incredibly healing, and I felt so welcomed, and I felt so validated and seen. And then when I got sick, you know, it takes, I've seen different statistics here, but it takes on average about 4 years and four doctors to get the diagnosis for an autoimmune condition.
Wow.
And I've seen that stat as much as 10 years. And even the rheumatologist that I was seeing said this may take us 7 years. So there's a lot of variation in this. But basically, my labs are showing I definitely have an autoimmune condition. I definitely have a ton of inflammation in my body, but we don't know what it is yet. And I'm being told by Western medicine that all we can do is wait. And we can give you pain medicine to help you get through this. But for somebody like me, I am a recovering addict. And so I don't take anything beyond Advil. And mm-hmm. if I take Advil every single day, it can cause me stomach problems. And so pain medication long-term doesn't feel like a solid solution for me.
Right.
And pretty much I was given the answer of, we just have to wait and see. And eventually your disease will progress enough to show on your labs. And here's the other issue with autoimmune testing is that you have to test at the right time, because with an autoimmune condition, you have flare-ups. And during those times, some of your numbers are going to look very different. Your inflammatory numbers are going to look different. Your ANA antibodies are going to look different. So some of these numbers are going to look different at certain points. So if you don't test at the right time, and then you may not get an answer for a very long time. And it's not clear. Like, I've been told, maybe I have lupus, maybe I have rheumatoid arthritis, maybe I have Crohn's, maybe this is beginning of celiac. I mean, it has been all over the place for me, all over the map. And in the meantime, I wasn't getting answers. And, you know, I felt like a human pincushion where I'm just being stabbed by needles all day and they're drawing blood. And no, it's the same thing every time. And so it got to a point where I realized that I felt so desperate to feel better and to just feel like I could stop being a bystander in my life. You know, if you look at my photo album from 2020, every single picture of me from that year is me laying on the couch, inflamed, in pain, tears in my eyes. And I didn't want to miss my kid's life anymore. You know, I just felt like I was on the sidelines, and it was so incredibly discouraging to like have a flare up and I'd run to the doctor and be like, okay, this is the time I'm going to finally get answers, and then get those labs back again and then say the same thing. Like, you know, this is, we still don't know what this is, and we can't give you any kind of treatment until we know what this is. All we can do is provide you with pain medication, pain management. And so I began to, I mean, there's just this level of desperation that I think that you don't really understand until you're in it. And so I have a lot of empathy for people that go online and they see somebody talking about how, you know, they cured their inflammation or they cured this and, you know, they had an autoimmune condition and then it went away. And God, like that hope that you feel, it's like, fuck, man. Like, I want that. Like, I want to feel just even 1% better today. I want to be able to play with my kids. I don't want to have to keep faking the smile. And so there's this level of desperation that you seek. And so I began to kind of try out some different things. And, you know, then I started to feel like I've started to notice that, you know, I would post something. Like, I posted one day in my stories that like I had made a batch of bone broth, and like I had several people in my anti-diet space, like group of friends, that shared a post about how bone broth is bullshit the same day. And I'm like, is this directed at me? Or, and I feel really shamed about it. And I feel like, okay, then I'd start to doubt myself and I'd start to question myself. And I go, okay, am I doing this for the right reasons? Do I actually enjoy this? Like, and I kind of go into the spiral. And in some ways, and this is going to sound weird, but in some ways, the anti-diet space almost started to become just as much of a prison for me as diet culture had been, because I was constantly looking to somebody else to tell me what I was doing whether I was doing it right or wrong. And I was also hyper fixated on what other people were doing. And like, I noticed that, you know, anytime I was on a diet and you go out to a restaurant, like you're hyper focused on what everybody else is ordering and you get really judgmental about it. Right. And yeah. I started to do the same thing with myself and with other people in my intuitive eating journey. And then I started noticing things like, I would eat a meal that just really felt so good. It was delicious. It was nourishing, but it could be easily mistaken as a diety type meal. And I would like panic. And I'm like, oh God, are my motivations behind this? Are they true? Are they pure? Do I feel better because it's in my head? And sometimes it would cause me to binge. You know, I go like grab a bag of hot Cheetos and pound a bag of hot Cheetos to prove that I was in a good enough intuitive eater, like that I could have the freedom to do what I wanted, that I still had that autonomy to do whatever the fuck I wanted. But in reality, it wasn't helping me. You know, it was hurting me. And I just became so obsessed with this idea that like somebody might, because you have to remember that like prior to me getting sick, I think I had really attached my identity to the anti-diet space and the anti-diet movement. And I believed in it so wholeheartedly, and I still do, but I had really attached myself to this identity of being a body image coach. And then, you know, we can get into that as well, the body image shit show that comes with chronic illness.
Yeah.
But I had really attached my identity to who I was in the anti-diet space. And so it just felt like almost like a betrayal to myself and to this community who had welcomed me in a state of being very sick, you know, with my disordered eating. It felt like this betrayal to even dabble in things like elimination diets or even consider the thought of going to a functional medicine practitioner. But then it also felt like a betrayal to myself and to my family to not do everything in my fucking power to feel better.
Yeah. Well, can I just tell you, like hearing all that, I think sharing stories like these are important.
Yeah.
Because in listening to you say this right now, first of all, like I knew that you were going through some shit, but like, I didn't even know half of this. And can I just say for any validation, if I was going through the amount of pain and suffering that you were at that time, and if somebody told me that I could cure myself by eating nothing but shit sandwiches, I would be like, hey, nobody else is helping. Might as right. well give it a whirl. Like
right.
I understand right. why we go down that rabbit hole. And then I'm also thinking about the people that push this stuff. Mm-hmm. And not saying that I'm, you know, excusing people that number one, use this sort of thing to like profit off of vulnerable people and, you know, like make money and cause harm when it's not within their scope of practice to do so. That's garbage. Right. And also I understand why said person who like accidentally eats a shit sandwich and cures their autoimmune disease and then wants to tell everybody, hey right. guys, if you just eat shit sandwiches, you're going to feel better.
Exactly. Because we get the pain. And God, like if I, like every time I hear about another friend that's struggling with even some of the things that I've been dealing with, I'm like, fuck man. Like I want to take away your pain because I know,
yeah.
I know. And it's just, you know, and I like, not to say that my life is harder than anyone else's. This is just my personal experience. But, you know, also through this, I have been going through some trauma therapy and trauma work, which has been like the hardest fucking thing I've ever done in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my husband took on a new career, like he moved up the ladder. And so he's gone for 16 hours a day and I'm solo parenting 90% of the time. And I got a child who is neurodivergent that I mm-hmm. have no support with. And, you know, it was a lot. And it's just like, fuck man, I don't have the energy to even get out of bed. And I have to, like, I don't have yeah. a choice. Like I can't lay in bed and wallow. Like I have to get up and I have to do these things. And so, you know, I almost felt like I didn't have a choice to not try to experiment, you know?
Right.
And, like I didn't, it felt like there wasn't another option. And I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of friends about this and that desperation that they feel. And I think a lot of us, and I do not blame Western medicine for this, but a lot of us have lost a lot of faith in Western medicine. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that play out in real time through this pandemic. And it's not because, I mean, we have been let down in some ways. And I understand research is very hard to get funding for. And, you know, there's not nearly as much research in autoimmunity that there should be. And I understand those things. I understand that the doctors are limited on what they can do. But when you go in every 3 months and you draw 20 vials of blood only to be told, like, I'm sorry, you feel like shit, but there's nothing I can do, over and over, when you are just trying to simply survive a fucking day.
Yeah.
Like, of course you're going to try the carnivore diet. Of course you're going to do an elimination diet. Like, why would you not? Like, I mean, I can't blame these people that are this level of desperation that these people feel, because now I've experienced it.
Yeah. You know? And you know, a lot of times when you talk about research, and I remember hearing this specifically from, like, I will just call her like the most popular anti-diet person, because I don't like to talk shit about people on the internet that have done me nothing wrong. But I just noticed that when I got into the anti-diet space, there was one particular person who, like, everybody listened to her podcast and she interviewed like all the big names. Mm-hmm. And everyone just over and over again said, like, there's no research to back this up. There's no research to back this up. But also, to your point, sometimes there's no research just because that research hasn't been funded and it hasn't been done yet. And everything that hasn't been researched hasn't been working for you. So what I'm curious about, and I guess what I'm hoping to help my listeners navigate, is how do we walk that fine line of caring for your health without getting sucked into like all the terrible parts of diet culture and like quacky dogma is what I'll call it. Like, how to, like, that's, I know that's like the age old question. We could go so many different directions with that, but.
Well, and it's so tricky because on both sides, I see this dogma, right? So I see a lot of dogma in the anti-diet space, like what you're talking about. So, you know, like the bone, we'll bring up the bone broth thing again, as an example. You know, the video that got shared for a while was like, there's no benefit to bone broth. And I'm thinking, look, motherfuckers, like, grandmas have been feeding chicken noodle soup with homemade broth for hundreds of years. Like, you can't tell me that, like, even if it's a mental thing, that, like, if that makes me feel good, that I shouldn't be drinking it because there's no research funding into bone broth. Like, but if I'm drinking it because I feel I have to, and I'm drinking it because it's the cure all, and it's like, and I've latched on to what it can do, and really it tastes like garbage, then, like, yeah, now it's a problem, right? Like, if I'm trading out my favorite coffee for bone broth because I feel like I'm a bad person if I drink coffee and I have to do this thing, that's one thing. But, like, just because the research isn't there yet, and let's be honest, like, will it ever be for certain things? Like who's going to do research on bone broth? You know what I mean?
But I'm thinking about, like, when you think about bone broth, or like, there's no scientifically proven benefit to bone broth. I'm like, bone broth, like, when it's well made and you pick like good seasonings, like, it's good. Like,
it's delicious. It's the base of a soup.
Like a savory, like, cup of bone broth. It's like tea for people who prefer savory flavors. And it's fat in it, which, like, makes it like a little bit fulfilling. Like, how about it just like tastes better than like the broth from a box?
Right. Well, and so I think, you know, not everything, and I understand that, like, there's not a lot of space online to discuss the nuance, because if you come on and you're trying to speak to an ideal client and all you're talking about is the nuance, then people are like, what the fuck, where does she stand?
Right.
So you kind of have to take a stand on certain things, but what it's done as a result is it's just kind of pushed us further and further away. And so now it's like, you have one camp saying, like, this thing is amazing. And then this other camp saying, actually, that thing's not research backed, so you shouldn't do it, or you're a piece of shit if you do this thing, like, it doesn't make any sense. And it's like, wait, like, what?
Right. Okay. What? And this is what I feel like I'm trying to do with fitness. And I'm really hoping that this conversation also normalizes the idea around food, because I hear a lot of my clients being like secretly apologetic, mm-hmm. for for eating certain things. And I think we do the same thing with exercise as well for doing certain kinds of workouts that we maybe don't necessarily like, but we have them because we feel like we should in order to be like a good anti-diet person, even though it's not serving us. Can I give you a couple of examples?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So one example that I'll give is like, let's talk about like sweetened beverages for a second. Mm-hmm. Like diet culture would be like, oh, well, like don't drink your calories, you know? And then anti-diet would be like, you're allowed to have the, you know, whatever, like caramel macchiato at Starbucks. But do you want to know something? Like back to the savory beverages thing. I actually don't like sweet drinks and I don't know what it is. I like to eat sweet flavors, but I don't like to drink sweet very much. And so I drink my favorite drink. If we go to Starbucks or whatever coffee shop, I'm going to get a nitro cold brew and I'm going to get it black. Yeah. And it's not because of diet culture. It's because I don't like the taste of sweet flavors. And somebody might come back and be like, oh, well, that's just like in your head and whatever. But like, no, a lot of us have done this work to realize like there are plenty of things that, you know, I wouldn't have eaten when I was stuck in diet culture that I actually do enjoy.
Right.
And there are a lot of things that I don't. And I mean, we could go back and forth and be like, Halo Top, trash. But like, you know, those frozen, like all fruit popsicles, pretty good.
Delicious.
You know, like thinking about stuff that you would have eaten at that time.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this with Daily Harvest. Now I feel like I don't do ads on my podcast, but now I feel like I need to cut to like, this podcast is brought to you by Daily Harvest. Sometimes, and for my clients that are listening to this, I would love, let me know what you think the next time you see me. Sometimes I feel like ashamed or that I have to hide the fact that I get Daily Harvest. It's those, if nobody knows what I'm talking about, if you don't know what I mean, it's these like, it's a food order thing that you can get delivered. That's kind of bougie. And most of them are like, quote unquote, healthy for, you know, whatever reason you want to say they're made with like organic vegetables and like weird produce that you can't pronounce and whatever. And I started getting them honestly, because, and again, this comes back to the why. When JJ was first born, my sister gifted them to me, like got me a Daily Harvest box because she knew it was going to be hard for me to feed myself. And so how great it is just to be able to like dump a little cup in the blender, pour some liquid on it, blend up a smoothie without having to think about it, or like pop a bowl in the microwave. That's going to be like the one way that you get to eat vegetables. And I think a lot of people would look at Daily Harvest and be like, Jenna, that's diet culture. And also you're super privileged for eating Daily Harvest. And like, yes, I am.
Right.
Yes. I understand that. And also my why for doing that has to do with the fact that having a toddler and not as much childcare I need and also working means that that might be the only time I eat a vegetable all day is because somebody put it in a bowl that I could put in the microwave and have it be ready for me in 3 minutes.
Right.
Anyway, that was my rant about Daily Harvest. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because I've been thinking a lot about intuition. So a lot of the trauma work that I'm doing is surrounding right now. We're talking a lot about inner child work. And I've been thinking about how this culture really, from a very young age, I think in general, we encourage people to ignore their intuition from a very young age. We were just chatting about this yesterday in regards to school lunchtime.
Yeah.
That we force these children to eat when maybe they're not ready to eat. And some of these school districts only allow 15 minutes for these kids. And so there's this trend right now on Instagram of these kids, their parents are timing them to eat their lunches in 15 minutes because they're trying to prep them for school because school starts next week. And, you know, from a very young age, we're taught to not listen to our intuition. And that was definitely true in my life for a lot of different reasons. And so, you know, then when so many of us walk away from the diet culture And we kind of latch onto this intuitive eating movement. And we're told, like, just listen to your body, listen to your intuition. And like, your body's so wise, your body knows. But so many of us have been so disconnected for so long that when you're telling me, it's hard to not, I think it's hard to not attach when diet culture has been your life for so long, you know, every diet becomes your identity, you know, whatever you're doing at the time, like whether it's Weight Watchers, that was my last hurrah was Weight Watchers. And like, I was so proud to be a Weight Watcher and I was so proud to make it to lifetime member. And it was such a huge part of my identity and I really latched onto it. And so, but I didn't have to listen to my intuition because my points told me what to do. You know? And so then we walk away from it. And some of us jump into the anti-diet space and the intuitive eating movement, and we don't ever really take a pause. And so it almost becomes, in a sense, I think, at least this is for me, this is my personal experience, it almost became, in a sense, like another diet for me.
Yeah.
Because, and not because it looked like a diet, calorically speaking, not on the plate, but in my mindset, because I felt like, okay, there's this set of rules. I know they're guidelines, but they're rules in my mind. They are rules. And I need to follow these things. And I'm looking to experts to guide the way, right? And so then I start becoming hyper aware of like, oh gosh, like, well, they wouldn't be eating this. So why am I eating this? And I start to, it just continued to build this self-doubt for me. And so the whole idea of me jumping onto intuitive eating, the whole goal was to build intuition. But you're talking to a woman who's never fucking believed in herself, never trusted her intuition. And you're telling me, like, you're just telling me to just listen to my body.
And that's where, you know, I'm not sure, did you wind up working with an intuitive eating counselor or did you just kind of like read the book and do the workbook and DIY it like I did?
Well, I kind of, so I DIY'd it. I did take a body image, course, which was kind of interesting. The woman who ran it, I loved her and I won't mention her name, but I think she was kind of just done with the anti-diet space. Not in her personal views, but I think done working in it. And she kind of went MIA halfway through the program. And,
now yeah, after this episode, I'm not trying to talk shit on my podcast, but I want to know who.
So it was kind of a strange thing. Like all of a sudden she just kind of disappeared and I had like asked a couple questions in the Facebook group and she never responded. And I'm like, oh shit, I guess I'm, you know, just like raw dogging this by myself.
Oh my God.
On my own here. So
that makes me feel like a really good coach and business owner simply by like being available to answer my clients' questions.
It was tough. And I think even if I'm being honest, even my body image was, body image is so much more complicated than I thought it was and that it was for me in that season. And I think that's something too, that like what works for you now in this season, I think we want to latch onto these identities and, you know, like this is what I'm doing and this is what makes me feel good. But like it changes from season to season. Right. And so before I got sick, my body image struggles looked incredibly different, like wildly different from what they look like now. And I think that I was very naive, in thinking that I understood body image as a whole. And, you know, there was a lot of identity wrapped up in being like a girl that power lifted that was in a bigger body. You know, I was one of the bigger girls at my gym and I could keep up with the rest of them. And I think I kind of latched onto that and I got some attention and some notoriety for that. And that made me feel good. And I think that I just, it in that season, I think that in a way I turned it into another way for me to be validated and seen, which there's nothing wrong with wanting validation and to be seen.
Yeah. Like we all want that.
Yeah, of course. But then when my whole world just kind of felt like it crashed down, it was this complete loss of identity. I mean, it wasn't really because those things are not who I am, but that's how it felt. It felt like this identity crisis of like, oh fuck, like I may never be able to powerlift again. I may never get to be a body image coach again, because clearly I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, because I can't even talk myself out of this. And, you know, I'm in no position to train anyone as a personal trainer at this point. And so it just felt like, and then of course, you know, with the eating thing, you know, I'm sitting here eating like with food with microgreens on the top of it and thinking like, oh my gosh, like everybody must think I'm on a diet right now. Fuck, who am I?
Okay. Yeah. I have so many thoughts about this. Just thinking about, like, first of all, before, because I want to dive into this conversation about navigating body image when you're dealing with a chronic illness, because that's like next level shit that I think is not talked about nearly enough.
Yeah.
And also before we do that, I want to come back to what you said before about like when you've experienced trauma, it makes me think of that. And I think you talked about this briefly, that book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Yes. Yes.
Great book. Really, really eye-opening. I just read that over the summer. And in thinking about like, number one, like what trauma does to us, but like, even if you haven't experienced trauma in a way that you can acutely like label this event as such, mm-hmm. a lot of us have kind of experienced this low grade. I don't want to throw around the term trauma lightly, but when you've been on a diet since you were like 10 years old, for example, you don't come away from that unscathed. And whether it's like mm-hmm. an acute trauma or just being embedded in diet culture, or being told that your body's wrong or whatever it is, you tune out your body and you tune mm-hmm. out your own intuition, because everybody else is telling you that you don't know what's best for yourself. And it's coming from all angles. And so then when it's just like, oh, listen to your body, you're like, what the fuck? What is my body saying? And then when people are like, love your body, I have to imagine that that's doubly hard when you feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to narrate your experience, mm-hmm. but when you feel like your body's betrayed you in a way, your body's like trolling you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, I mean, trauma comes in all forms, and I will also just like add that while I personally have some, you know, more of like what we stereotypically think of as trauma. Like I have some pretty, you know, significant traumas starting at age 5, but it's interesting as I've gone through therapy that those events themselves, weren't necessarily the things that created the trauma. It uh-huh. was the follow-up after that. So, the lack of emotional support, feeling unsafe constantly, feeling like those things happened because they were my fault, and building these core beliefs about myself, and having them reaffirmed over and over and over. And so, you know, I've just, you know, in therapy, I finally got to this point where I realized what my core beliefs have been my whole life. Mm-hmm. And they are, I'm unlovable. I am bad. I make bad choices. Fuck. and that the world is not safe. And, you know, how do you just like unravel that I am bad story? And so for somebody like me, and again, this is just my personal experience, part of the reason why I latch on to like whatever this person's doing. So if you have an anti-diet coach saying, just eat a cookie, I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm going to eat a cookie because I need someone to validate me that I'm doing something right and that I am good.
Yeah.
Just for a moment, I want to feel like I'm good.
Yes.
And so many of us have that experience, whether you've experienced this, you know, like significant trauma. All trauma is significant because it's not necessarily about the event itself. It's how it's the lasting impact that has left on us. And it's all relative, right? Like some of the things that I've been through, other people be like, oh God, like I could never. And I'm just like, you know, like shit happens, you know, like it was much less about that. And it's interesting as I had to go through this list of all these traumas that happened in my life. And you'd think that like this big one would really fucking matter. And it was like, yeah, but this little one that seems insignificant actually left scars that were so damaging my entire life. And so I just want to make sure that like I clarify for your listeners that I like never to downplay the significance of their traumas. And diet culture, dieting is trauma. It can be trauma for some, but not for everybody, right? Not for everybody. I'm sorry. I guess I just got off on a tangent and I forgot your question.
Okay. I was
about
just
the betrayal, about the betrayal.
Body image and chronic illness.
Right. So I, for me, especially when I got sick, you know, prior to that, I think that I was able to accept my body because I'm going to be honest, everybody around me accepted my body, right? Because it was okay that I was, you know, quote unquote overweight, because I was also fit. I was also active. And I was in a socially acceptable body as a result. And then when I got sick, I actually had like a very rapid weight gain as a side effect of my chronic illness. And, you know, my body is in a pretty much chronic state of inflammation at this point in time. And it was interesting because up to that point in my life, body image had always been about, oh, I look so fat today, or like, oh, you're so ugly. And suddenly I found myself looking in the mirror and this makes me a little emotional, feeling like my body was not home and feeling incredibly unsafe in my body, because with an autoimmune condition, for those of, that are not aware, basically your body is attacking itself. Your body does not recognize your healthy cells as being healthy. It recognizes them as a foreigner and it will start to attack your healthy cells. And so I would look in the mirror and I would just go, God, you look so sick today. And that was like a whole other thing where it's like, how am I supposed to even feel neutral about my body? Because that was something that I really latched onto as well. Like body neutrality really helped me get to a place of like, I guess you could say body love, right? Of, or I thought was body love, because I could be like, oh, thank God. Like my feet are working today. I got out of bed. Like my legs are so strong, you know, my lungs are helping me breathe, and I could focus on the functionality of my body. And that kind of helped me build some body neutrality. But then when I'm looking in the mirror and I can't even point out, you know, I have so much sickness running through my body and nothing is functioning properly. Like, how am I supposed to be like, thank you, body, for showing up for me today, when my body is attacking itself and it feels like betrayal? And it's like, fuck, I haven't felt safe my entire life. And now I no longer even feel safe in my body. You know, I have a very deep core belief that the world is not safe. And now my fucking body's not safe. Like, where do I go? What do I do?
And so what do you do?
Well, you know, definitely a lot of dissociating, but that's not a recommendation. But I mean, for me, you know, it was interesting. I actually went to go see a functional medicine practitioner at one point, which I, you know, is out of pocket. And it was a huge sacrifice financially for us to make. But again, that desperation and it was interesting. She, functional medicine is a little bit of quackery, but also some really great things about it. And one of the things that she brought up, the doctor that I worked with, is she asked me about, if I have a history of trauma. And she was the first person that made that link for me. And, you know, she recommended that I seek out therapy. And she said, you can fix all the physical stuff in your body. You can try to feel better. But if you don't work on what's going on mentally, like, you're going to continue to have this problem because, you know, I mean, pretty much I've been diagnosed with, complex PTSD. So my body pretty much lives in a state of fight or flight all the time. I mean, my kids will walk around the corner and like, I jump and like my heart's racing. Like I can't, I'm easily startled. I freeze in moments when I should take action. It's like, I often feel like I don't have control over my responses. And so she was the first person that suggested, like, you know, maybe your nervous system is dysregulated and, you know, we can only help you so much if you don't work on this with the therapist. And so And I understand therapy is not accessible to everybody. And I feel very fortunate that I was able to access that. But I will be honest, I think that that has probably been the biggest game changer in my health, my overall health, because I've had to really come home to myself and rebuild a lot of trust and learn to regulate my nervous system, which is incredibly difficult to do when, 30 years of dysregulation and trauma. So,
it's interesting when I hear you talk about like, and again, I think we get this way, like the black and white thinking around either or, and I've been on as people know, because I had a doctor that I really liked who helped me navigate, my whole like thyroid hormone issue shit show that I had going on. That was the thing that led me out of diet culture, and found this one doctor, like the only person out of, I think he was actually the third doctor I tried, that was actually able to get me some answers and help me to feel better, has recently gone out of network to a functional medicine practice, which is so hard having to pay for that out of pocket. And also feeling like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like when you found that relief from something, you're almost afraid to go back into the other. And so when looking for like a new, even just like a primary care doctor, being like, I need somebody who's like a little bit functional medicine, meaning like actually cares about figuring out what is causing this,
right,
instead of just slapping a Band-Aid on it, while also not going out like so far into quackery. And one of the things that we talked about was you being like the therapy thing, obviously you found was really helpful. One of the things that I sometimes find is that you'll then be prescribed like a bunch of supplements. Can get real sketchy when they're not regulated. And I don't necessarily think there's, depending on what you're trying, there could be more harm in that than others, but it's also like so expensive. And you're like, does this even work? Does it even matter? Like, is this regulated? Is it researched? How do we walk that fine line of like caring for your health, and your whole health and trying different things without getting sucked into some, I'm going to go back to like quacky dogma thing. I don't know what else to call it.
I know. I'm sorry. We keep kind of traveling away from this question. I wish that I had like a very clear-cut answer. I think, unfortunately, in my situation, I did have to experiment with some things. And I mean, the last 2 years have been such a roller coaster of like really having to figure out what felt aligned and true for me.
Yeah.
And something that I did have to do for a pretty significant amount of time is I actually unfollowed a lot of anti-diet accounts. And I also unfollowed a lot of like anything related to health. I just had to like mute people or unfollow them and just completely turn off the noise for a little bit. I took several social media breaks throughout the past 2.5 years when needed, and really just sitting with myself and deciding, does this feel true for me? Is this something I enjoy? Is this something that I would do even if nobody was watching? And I think that's something, that I think that we all kind of face this, this internet scrutiny, and we all feel like we're a little bit under the microscope. And I think it really impacts a lot of the decisions that we make about our lives and the choices that we make. And so, with like, for example, with the functional medicine practitioner, I mean, I know that this will be an unpopular opinion possibly, but in the Western medicine space, the reality is there are plenty of doctors that are overprescribing medications and not really prescribing them for the right reasons. But it's also very similar in the holistic space, because there's a lot of overprescribing or encouraging of supplementation.
That's right.
And, you know, when I went to go see the functional medicine practitioner, she did very thorough labs, and I did have some pretty significant deficiencies in a lot of things.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I deal with is I deal with pretty low vitamin D levels, like dangerously low vitamin D levels. And even with supplementation, it's very hard for me to get my numbers up. And I'm out in the sun all the time, so it's not necessarily a lack of vitamin D. But for whatever reason, my body is not metabolizing vitamin D and using it in the way that it needs to. So, so, you know, some supplements that she was offering me, they made sense, but then others that she, I mean, she prescribed me a 3-month supply of supplements and it was $1,000. And at that point I had already paid $1,600 for labs and, you know, $100 for the visit that day. And, you know, again, this was a huge privilege to even be able to explore this world. But also, incredibly expensive and a huge sacrifice because we are a one income household. And, you know, I think that sometimes that desperation can be preyed on, and sometimes that desperation, can lead us to throw away a lot of money. And one of the things that I had to recognize, like for me, you know, with a lot of the supplements, a lot of them I could get from food and foods that I enjoyed eating.
Yeah.
And so I thought, do I really need this supplement or can I just eat this food instead?
Yeah.
And, so there were certain ones like that where that's kind of how I navigated it. And then certain things that she recommended diet wise, I had to get to a point, like she did have me run through an elimination diet and, you know, it seemed like it worked for me, because I just had been feeling like shit for so long that, like, I think that it was nice to kind of, in a way it was nice to have a little bit of a limited amount of food because then I knew what was affecting me and I knew what was not affecting me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously I did that under the guidance of a doctor.
And one of the things we talked about was how, you know, the message that we hear like preached so often, and I preach that too, is like, you like, this thing is out of this person's scope of practice. So you need to be a registered dietitian for nutrition advice and a personal trainer for fitness advice. And, you know, this kind of doctor for this thing. And when you're seeking all of these things, it makes sense why some people just try like a random elimination diet offline, much like I did back in the day, because like the cost of seeing the kind of provider that can guide you through something like that in a more, I don't know what the word that I'm looking for, I guess like a safer way or a more scientifically backed way or whatever is so fucking expensive. And so there's, I guess, that little piece of like compassion for anybody who's going through that, but also for like our former selves, you know, or even like my former self, even our current selves. There's definitely that, like that gray piece to navigate. And I'm sure where therapy has come in for you and, and been really helpful in like figuring out where you actually stand, because I think it can be both and coming back to like my experience with the thyroid stuff, the first doctor I saw wanted to put me on Synthroid immediately, but I wanted to understand why that was happening. And so when I finally found the doctor that I worked with, he was actually able to get to the root cause of it and figure out that there were some, you know, like some hormone dysregulation and some other stuff that we were able to figure out to get me to a better, healthier place overall. And also at the end of the day, I still need to take some thyroid meds.
Right.
And it's both and.
Right. And unfortunately, not everybody has the time, the resources, the access to experiment with different doctors or see a registered dietitian. And I mean, if you were doing the math on that, I spent almost $3,000 to see this practitioner and to get these medications. I mean, that's a big fucking chunk of money. for most of us, you know? And not everybody can do that. And so, and I think I also, I'm hesitant to say this, but I feel
we can edit it out.
I feel like it needs to be said, but some of these more popular elimination diets, they align pretty closely with medical elimination diets. So they're not all bullshit. They're not.
So this actually, this kind of leads itself beautifully into the next like question slash topic that I had, which is like following advice that wasn't meant for you, because that was something that I did. And I see a lot of people falling into that trap, because right now this conversation, to be clear, this is Caitlin and I talking about personal experience. And there are a lot of people on the internet who are pushing things based on their personal experience. But just because Caitlin did an elimination diet that was similar to some of the stuff you could follow for free on the internet, meant for healing autoimmune disease, that advice might not apply to somebody like me, raises hand, who doesn't have an autoimmune disease. Right. And this is where the problem comes in, where we take things so black and white. Like we hear influencers talking about, you know, and we talk a little bit about like ideal client stuff, because we're both in the online business space, or had been. And some of these people, we have to realize when you're getting like a quick sound bite, not the longer nuanced conversation, you don't realize, hey, maybe this person isn't talking to me. They're talking to someone who has an autoimmune disease. They're not talking to me. They're talking to someone who's in eating disorder recovery. They're not talking to me. They're talking to somebody who's trying to be a professional bodybuilder. And we take in all this health and fitness advice as if it is the gospel truth that applies to us. And the fact of the matter is, some people just aren't talking to you.
Right, right.
And you got to keep scrolling.
Yeah. And this definitely goes back to that intuition piece and like turning intuitive eating and anti-diet almost into another like mind fuck prison of just another diet, because I think some of the behaviors are still there, right? Even if you're in the anti-diet space, but you're clinging to that one woman that's like, just eat a cookie, just love your body, just do this. And we're still not asking ourselves and learning to build self-trust. And I think that like, that is such a personal journey that no one can really speak to online. Like all you can do is speak to yourself to a certain extent, you know, because I think everybody's so different and, you know, like with my situation, like there's probably a lot of people listening that don't have trauma, or maybe they do have trauma and they resonate with some of that. So some of my stuff is deeply rooted in trauma, like even the binge eating thing. This is a great example. So there's a lot of conversation in the anti-diet space about how binge eating is connected to restriction. Right. And so that's the message that I kept hearing over and over and over is like, if you're not restricting, you're not going to binge. You're not restricting. You're not going to binge. And so then I would binge and I'm like, what the fuck? Like I'm not restricting. So clearly like I'm doing something wrong. Like, so I would, you know, I would feel like I was a bad intuitive eater. I was doing something wrong because I was still binging. And then it turns out, so a very personal note here, but for me, binging is a form of self-harm.
Wow.
It has nothing to do with restriction for me. I mean, it may have at certain points when I was dieting, but so it's like what you're saying is you can't speak to all the nuance. And if you did, it would be so complicated, right? If you shared every little bit of nuance, people would literally be so confused by your content, be like, what the fuck, Jenna? Like, what do you do? Like, what do you do? If you were constantly going on there being like, I love strength training, but like Pilates is cool. And like, so is cardio. Like, if that's your thing, like, you know, yoga's cool if you like that, but I like strength training. If you constantly were speaking to all these things, it would be so complicated. Mm-hmm. But we're leaving out as a result, because of this black and white view, in some ways it does kind of do a disservice to people that are on this journey of like, what do I do here? Like, how do I navigate this?
And really, go ahead.
Oh no, just that, it can get really complicated because clearly those people weren't talking to me, like what you're saying, that didn't resonate with my story. But I was like, well, it must, because this is what everybody's saying. Everybody's saying that binge eating is because of restriction. And so, you know, it was tough to navigate that and to really get to the root of what feels true to me, what is real for me. And that's hard to do when you've been listening to other people for your whole life.
And that's exactly why I wanted to have this conversation. Number one, like publicly, right. Because I feel like this is one of those conversations, number one, that people are afraid to have out in the open or to know that other yeah. people are having these conversations, or quite simply to even bring this up with people that you're friends with in the DMs, because mm-hmm. we've been back and forth. We've had this like DM friendship going for a couple of years now. And I don't think I even learned like all the intricacies of your life and your experience today, but we have had enough of an open relationship with each other to know that we can, you know, one of us can come and say something.
Yeah.
And the other one can come back and like, hey, have you considered this, without it turning into like, you're a terrible person. And
right.
It takes an incredible amount of openness. And I think that's like, if we come back to the Enneagram, that's like your nine, like peacemaker. And that's like the curiosity of a seven.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's how we change the game. I think is having these types of dialogues where we share, and it's vulnerable. Like it's hard to share. I mean, I'm pretty open about my shit. But it is scary to admit some of these things, and some of the best conversations that I have had in the last year are people that I thought were in completely different camps than me.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, in regards to the pandemic, in regards to schooling, whatever it may be, anti-diet versus diet. I mean, I have had some of the most powerful conversations. And I think what we're seeing right now is online, just again, this like very black and white. And I understand some of the reasons for that. But now it's almost like we're just screaming into an echo chamber. So like nobody's fucking listening anyways, because we're all just yelling the same shit at each other. And so we're not actually creating change. And if anything, if you start to feel a little bit different than what your echo chamber is saying, like for me with the anti-diet space, I started to feel like a little bit different. And I'm like, oh God, like, where do I go? The diet space isn't going to accept me. The autoimmune community might not accept me. And we're hardwired for community and for connection. And so I think until we start having these conversations where we talk about the nuance, and it's going to require a lot of fucking vulnerability from a lot of us.
And I think it maybe starts with like that one person. Right. In your life that you think there's a window with, whether that's like, you know, whether that's somebody in your real life, like an actual friend or family member, or somebody, you know, somebody that you know in the DMs, because I think there's a whole lot of sneaky, like me too, with God, fuck, like anything and everything, but especially when it comes to the way that we relate to food and, and exercise and fucking all of it. It's damn. It's like a vulnerability hangover, but it also makes me think of that. I think it's a Brene Brown quote where she says, people are hard to hate up close, move in.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And to be clear, I am not suggesting that everybody go out and have a conversation with somebody that's like abusive or that will gaslight you. I'm not saying that like, we should just all be friends with like piece of shit people. I mean, I think they're like, I want to make
sure we gotta set some boundaries somewhere.
We do, but I think that there's this opportunity right now, and I hope that there's a shift happening where we are so incredibly divided on every single issue, and some issues like non-negotiable. Like, but again, if you really sit down and you have a conversation with some of these people, you realize that we all have a lot more in common than I think we want to admit.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I don't know, maybe this is the optimist in me, but I think we're all just trying to do the best that we fucking can.
Yeah.
And with the knowledge that we have. And until we start kind of crossing lines and having these dialogues with, you know, like you and I mean, there were a lot of things that I was not sharing in our little group chat about things that I was trying because I feared shame and judgment, and not because of you personally, but that was something I was struggling with, of like, how do I tell these people that I'm, you know, like, I feel like I'm dipping my toes back in diet culture waters, and what are they going to think? And having to navigate that on my own. And then when I finally did kind of open up about that, I'm like, hey, actually guys, like, I get why these people do this thing because I've been doing it. And you guys received me so, so warmly, and like, wow, like I had never thought about that. I'm like, yeah, like that makes sense. I get that. And it does require a lot of vulnerability to share those things, but I think that's how, another Brené Brown quote, right? Is the, what is it? Something about shame can't exist in the dark.
Right.
And so, I think until we start having conversations about hard things and the nuance, a lot of us are still living kind of in shame about various things about that we don't want to share because we fear a loss of identity. We fear a loss of community. We fear that judgment.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that we like finally got to talk about this and we got to bring it out in the open. And I'm like, I'm honestly like, I'm kind of sad that you didn't tell me about it sooner because I would have been like, damn it, Caitlin, just like eat the shit sandwich, girl.
I know. Well, and to be honest, I mean, I've had, I probably wouldn't have been ready. Excuse me. A couple months ago, I probably would not have been ready for this. I have done a lot of work to get where I'm at now, mentally and emotionally speaking. And so I don't think that I would have been ready to have this conversation a couple months ago because I think I was still very much living in shame about it. And it was very difficult for me.
Well, thank you for bringing it out into the open because I am 100% certain, especially because of some of the other conversations that I've had with friends, with clients, with family members surrounding, you know, especially things related to food. I know you are 100% not alone. Yeah. Just like, nobody's talking about it, but at the end of the day, it all comes back to, you know, not what you're doing, but why you're doing it. And that involves introspection and curiosity, and a whole hell of a lot of compassion and non-judgment.
Right.
But
did
we miss anything? I feel like we touched on so many things. Is there anything else you want to tell everybody or anything else we should add?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's tough. Like, I wish that I could give some kind of piece of advice to tell people like how to navigate this, but really it's such a personal journey. And I think, you know, there's a lot of experimentation that people will probably have to go through when they're trying to navigate a chronic illness, and a lot of looking at within, for sure. A lot of looking within, and, it's definitely a journey. Like you're not going to figure it out overnight. You know, I'm still figuring it out and I still don't have answers, and it's incredibly frustrating. And I also want to validate that for anybody who's listening, who's going through a chronic illness journey. It is hard. It is just really hard. And I want to validate that. And it fucking sucks to have to get up every morning and even think about this stuff. And I want to validate that for people.
Thank you for that, Caitlin. This was so wonderful talking about you. I know you're not currently, I feel like your online presence now is mostly personal stuff, like your garden and your kids and stuff. What do you want to share anything with anybody?
I mean, people are more than welcome to follow our journey, but yes, I pretty much post about my garden and our little homeschooling adventures. And, you know, I love to cook. Cooking is definitely like how I show love. I love to cook for my family. So if any of those things interest people or feel related to their lives, they're more than welcome to follow me. But if you're looking for like, every now and then I'll talk about my chronic illness stuff, but I do kind of tend to keep that private.
Yeah.
Because it is very personal, and, you know, I don't really want to have to deal with the conversations of, you know, people misunderstanding my reason. And I also got really tired of feeling like I needed to explain myself. Like, here's my bone broth, but I can assure you I'm not on a diet. And, you know, I do this because I love it. Like, I don't want to have to keep putting disclaimers on the things that I do. And so I've just decided to kind of keep that part somewhat private and out of, you know, so I don't have to worry about the judgment or the conversations about it. But people are welcome to follow me if homeschooling is their thing. We are a secular homeschool family. And yeah, that's it.
Cool. Well, thank you for being here. This was so wonderful and so needed. So yeah, thanks again for sharing your story, Caitlin.
All right. Thanks, Jenna.
We'll talk soon. That was such a good conversation. I hope you got as much out of it as I did. And I just have to let you know that after I stopped recording that episode, Caitlin and I proceeded to talk for another hour and 15 minutes. She is really one of those people that I could talk to all day. So that being said, if you liked this episode, I will link to where you can follow Caitlin and see her and her kids and her amazing garden, if you're into all of those things, in the show notes. And I also want to remind you to please go to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star rating and review. It would mean the world to me. That's all I've got for today. Thanks for being here. Have a wonderful rest of your day, a great week, and we will talk soon. Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram at itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure that you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.